good evening. You are tuning in to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Up next is The Struggle.
And third Friday from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. From the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and political commentary. We will ease your troubled mind with licensed mental health counselor Cheryl Jefferson, political analysis provided by the Prophet of Rage, and calling in from the planet of rhythm and blues, musicologist Professor Soul. From the grassroots, I'm your host, Lanita Duke, on 90.7 FM, KBOO in Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Brew for the SLU, Columbia SLU Watershed Council Give Guide Party on Thursday, December 13th, 4 to 8 p.m. at the Alberta Street Pub in Portland. This event features food, drink, live music, fortune telling, and more. The Columbia SLU Watershed Council works to clean up the Columbia SLU. They teach environmental education in schools, engage volunteers to plant trees, and nature festivals. Again, that's Brew for the SLU, Columbia SLU Watershed Council Give Guide Party on Thursday, December 13th from 4 to 8 p.m. at the Alberta Street Pub, 1036 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, everyone. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. This week on The Struggle, I'm speaking to Alana Goldman. She is the lead organizer of Jewish Voice for Peace at Portland State University, and they are about to do, I guess, the first annual Hanukkah celebration mm-hmm. that's called Bye Bye Birthright. Mm-hmm. Alana, can you say what Bye Bye Birthright even means?
Yes. Okay, I'm going to make sure everyone can hear me. So Birthright, for those of you who don't know, is a free trip sponsored by Zionist right-wing nationalists, basically, who are pro-Israel, who can take, have taken over 600,000 diasporic Jews from like 10 different countries to Israel for free, basically, and they take you to like bars and they don't tell you about anything that's really happening there. And it's a way for like right-wing nationalists to sort of like normalize the occupation and normalize apartheid, basically, to show Jews or convince Jews that it's their homeland and that they should take a free trip and all that stuff. And they extended the age, I think, like last year to 31. So anyone from 18 to 31 can be eligible for this trip, basically. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and so the theme of the dinner is called Bye Bye Birthright because Jewish Voice for Peace believes that we should boycott any free trip on stolen land and that we should not take this trip as Jews and that we should be, like, telling our community as Jews, like, you shouldn't also take this trip for younger Jews who are still considering it.
So there were a couple of words there that I want to tease out so that everyone is working on the same page. Mm-hmm. So even before I jump into that, I just want to talk about the significance of a Jewish organization that is calling out Israel, that like mm-hmm. the importance and the significance of that. Mm-hmm. Because as we know, most critiques of Israel are cast as anti-Semitic attacks. Mm-hmm. So can you just talk about the history of JVP mm-hmm. nationally mm-hmm. or internationally, actually, mm-hmm. and its significance?
Yeah, okay. So JVP, I want to say, was started early 2000s. I don't know the exact year. Mm-hmm. So it started out as chapters were popping up in different cities, and then over the past, like, 10 years, I'd say, there's chapters that have been popping up throughout college campuses with alongside Students for Justice in Palestine and SUPER, which is Students United Palestinian Equal Rights. And those also we're all sort of like tied together into mm-hmm. like this Palestine solidarity work, basically. Mm-hmm. And so it's expanded into over 100 like chapters in cities and in on college campuses. And basically our mission statement is like, we're led by Jewish values. So as Jewish people who know that we've been exiled like for all of history, basically, how can we say never again and only mean for like only if it affects us? Mm. And so as Jews, we're like led by our morals and our principles, and obviously as human beings, because everyone should care about Palestine, to like bring awareness to what's happening, obviously as a watered down version, but to also talk about the occupation, talk about the history of the state of Israel that a lot of Jewish people aren't told about, and what was like the, yeah, and also like they have their like three steps, like they, so their like platform basically is to end the occupation, to mm-hmm. like destroy the border wall is the first one, the main one. Mm-hmm. And then the right of refugee return. So like Palestinians in the diaspora and in 48 can have the human right to return back to their homes where they were expelled in 1948 mm-hmm. during the Nakba. And so JVP is one of the only Jewish-led organizations that's on the left that supports the right of return and also supports BDS, mm-hmm. which a lot of people don't know. So JVP is really adamant on supporting BDS because we've seen time and time again that BDS works mm-hmm. and it's still working, and it worked in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And
to end their apartheid.
To end apartheid, mm-hmm. yeah. And so JVP like sees that and recognizes that, and mm-hmm. also knows that BDS is what Palestinians called for. So like, who would we be as an organization that claims to support Palestinian liberation mm-hmm. and then not even listen to like the one main component of what Palestinians are like, hey, we think this is going to work, like mm-hmm. we need you to support us, and all these other like leftist, I don't know, Jewish organizations are like, well, we don't want that mm-hmm. but we still want to end the occupation.
Sure.
So yeah, that's like okay. the basic like principles of JVP, I guess. There's also other things too in different campaigns and stuff, but
so I just want to start with some terms from starting from the end mm-hmm. and then going back to the beginning. So BDS is?
Boycott, Divest, Sanctions.
Which points at?
Mainly, it's a wide variety of things, but mainly pinpointing different companies that are complicit in Israeli apartheid. So like mm-hmm. a big one is Caterpillar, which is a demolition company, mm-hmm. basically, like construction. Mm-hmm. And they are responsible for demolishing so many Palestinian homes and villages and like stores. So people have made Caterpillar a big one over the past few years. And then even down to like
SodaStream.
SodaStream, Lana mm-hmm. Del Rey performing at a music festival.
Oh yeah, yeah.
She ended up
cultural
not going.
Stuff too, not
yeah,
just
so it's like
products.
Yeah, so it's like products is like obviously like right in the forefront because yeah. that's money. Like that's
also cultural exchange.
Yeah, and like celebrities mm-hmm. and. It has like a wide, yeah, and professors mm-hmm. and yeah, it's like a wide, basically it's just saying like, do not spend your money there, don't normalize occupation and apartheid, because when you go there, like for the artists and whatever, when you go there and you perform to a show where half the people who live there can't even go, mm-hmm. what are you saying about that? What are you saying about like that society that you think that's okay?
Mm.
And so yeah, like that I think is like a big part of it too. But yeah, obviously all the corporations that are complicit, and they're everywhere, like anywhere in the US, any city, you will find a company that works with Israel. And mm. like in Portland, we can talk about that. But
oh my.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
Oh dear. Okay. So then the Nakba
mm-hmm.
or the Great Catastrophe,
mm-hmm.
1948, mm-hmm. when the IDF began to purge
mm-hmm.
Palestinians from their homes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so 750,000 Palestinians became refugees and could not return home after the Nakba, which is why I think referencing 1948 is so important, because in a lot of this work you'll find Jews who only talk about like 1967 and will say like, well, that was when it really started. That was mm. when the occupation started.
Mm.
And a lot of us will say, no, This started years before when Palestinians were displaced from their homes and literally wear keys because they want to return back to their homes, but they can't.
I've seen some really stunning images of older Palestinian people who still have the keys to the to their homes that have long been demolished or are now being lived in by settlers. So then the border wall. Can you talk about the border wall?
I think it was started in 1999, I don't know, when I was not even born.
But just say what it is.
So it's literally, so Israel likes to call it a security fence. If you look on Wikipedia, or any pro-Israel site, they'll call it a security fence. They'll say that they're defending their borders. And if you go to the West Bank, which I was there over the summer, you will obviously see that it's not a security fence. We can talk about what a fence is. We can talk about what a wall is. but it's basically, I think, over 11 miles of, not all of it is this huge wall. Some of it is actually a fence, which just proves that what they justify building the wall for doesn't even make sense because there are people who work in 48, which when I say 48, I'm talking about Israel, but I just don't want to give Israel validity, so I'll say 48. but there are Palestinians who live in the West Bank who have to go to work every day, and there are people who hop the border or find ways to get over the border or go through checkpoints, and it's their justification was ending terrorism or whatever they want to say, and it's just so ironic that it has done absolutely nothing but create more of a fear-mongering tactic, a separation between both societies, and more violence and hatred on the Israeli side, because a lot of the people who are adults now grew up with that wall, so that's normal for them to see that every day.
And then finally, the IDF. We just said IDF. Mm-hmm. When you say that, it's a stand-in for
Israeli Defense Force. Right. So the Israeli Defense Force, I think, is the 10th most powerful military in the world. What do I have to say about them? There's so much to say about them. You have to enlist in the military in Israel when you turn 18. It's mandatory. So the normalization of being a soldier and having a really militarized society is completely normal from when you're basically a child, if you're Israeli and you're born there or whatever. So this fear-mongering is literally from birth, and here's your enemy, here's who wants to kill you, and so here when you turn 18 we're giving you not just any gun but a literal machine gun strapped around your body, and you can take it on the bus, you can take it to the grocery store. We all respect you. We'll give you all sorts of benefits from it. And that's normal. It's fine. And they receive $10 million a day from the United States.
Dollars at work.
So if you think it's not personal, which I think a lot of people who hear about this conflict, it's not a conflict. But when people first hear about it, they're like, oh, well, it doesn't, I don't want to have a stance because it's it doesn't really affect me. And I just want to tell everyone that it does affect you because your tax dollars are literally feeding into this. So it should be something everyone is aware of. And
we could have quality health care and education if it wasn't for this.
So much money. So much money.
So thank you for laying that out. I don't want to assume that every listener knows exactly what we're talking about when we use some of these terms, so I like to jot them down without interrupting, but just coming back.
It's important.
Thank you. So if you could talk a little bit about what JVP is up to now, you can talk about nationally, but then specifically at Portland State University, and why students, why Portland State University?
Okay, so JVP, I think JVP just launched a campaign 2 days ago to support Mark Lamont Hill. So basically, yeah, it's getting a lot of signatures. So basically, JVP has different campaigns. One of the ones that we're focusing on is Return the Birthright, which obviously I already talked about that at the beginning, but it's specifically based around Jewish people not taking a free trip on land that isn't theirs, basically. And other, what are they? They also just I think they sort of co-opt BDS campaigns because they're this is already happening and you need support and you need a lot of numbers, so we'll help you with that. So BDS is a big one, I think. And then I don't think the Airbnb campaign was led by JVP. I think it was led by Code Pink, which is another organization who's amazing.
It's anti-war. Anti-war. Madea Benjamin.
Yeah, women-led anti-war. Mm-hmm. They're amazing.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Airbnb.
But we all sort of work in, like, realms with each other. So if there is a campaign that's like, hey, like, this is really important, this just happened today, like, for example, the Great March of Return, mm-hmm. that has been happening in Gaza since March, which is still happening. Every time something happens or someone gets shot or injured or killed or if anything like that happens, like, JVP will hear about it and respond, and other organizations will, like, communicate with each other, like, what do you think we should do? Mm-hmm. And also with non-Jewish organizations, too. So, like, yeah. But
at Portland State University.
Okay, so at Portland State University. Mm-hmm. So I will... So to start off, there's so much credit to be given already at PSU because a BDS resolution was passed in 2016, and I don't even know where I was. I was, like, asleep for that entire year or something. But so, like, that was an entire huge success and victory that is, like, I don't know, just amazing, like, the work put into that. And then
Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights.
Yeah, super
did that. And the Student Union.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, SUSU, of course. Yeah. And so, anyway, so I noticed, like, my freshman year probably that there was no place for anti-Zionist Jews to go if they wanted a community, but they didn't want to, like, I've always felt like my values align every single thing I do. So I was like, I would love to have this, like, really sacred Jewish space on campus because I think that's important for anyone who needs a community. But, like, I can't sit there while you talk about, like, what you're doing over the summer going to Israel or, mm-hmm. like, bringing an IDF soldier to speak. I'm not going to sit there and just think that's okay or, like, normalize that.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time I ever went to, like, I went to a Shabbat dinner or something, and I was like, well, what's your stance on Israel? Like, literally... 17-year-old me, I was like, I would like to know. And they were like, sweetie, we don't talk about that. Like, we're unpolitical. We're unbiased. Like, we don't have any affiliation.
Oh, dear.
And I was like, okay, that's great. And I never came back. Wow. So, like, basically for the past 2 years, I've seen the fact that they're not apolitical. They bring IDF soldiers to come speak about the literal normalization of them working at checkpoints and... just, like, there's layers of, like, they also have a free trip that they can sponsor, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I knew that wasn't true, and I was like, there needs to be something where Jews can come and, like, really, not even just Jews, but, like, have a space that is not Zionist is, like, just so important because it is so, number one, heavily funded. Like, the school will give money to... Zionist groups, basically, because a lot of people don't want to be accused of being anti-Semitic,
yeah.
and there's no, like, real education around, like, the difference between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, mm-hmm. so there's
what,
that.
Can you say what it is?
Oh, I would love to say what it is.
And then we'll circle back. Go on.
Okay, so I feel like if you were raised in this country, you have to have learned about the Holocaust, because, like, number one, I have a lot to say about that, too, because we talk all about genocide and, like, talk about how horrible it is, but we don't acknowledge anyone else's genocide. And a lot of... Yeah, anyway. So, anti-Semitism, literally, like, from the dictionary, is, like, the hatred of the Jewish people and, like, the hatred of the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. It's like, it still exists. It's always existed. Fascism's not on the rise. It's always been on the rise. And anti-Zionism is on the other side of it, basically saying, like, you do not support a Jewish nation state. And I think a lot of people will get, like, weary about that, where they'll say, like, I don't know, I think, like, because it's Jewish, therefore it's okay. But, like, I don't think you should support any nation state because you can't have a nation state without it being inherently racist and hierarchical.
Mm.
Like, that's impossible. We could talk about nation states, but...
And particularly you talk about right-wing nationalism in an Israeli context. Can you talk about how Israel's democracy deviates from a typical liberal democratic
And we
model?
Can talk about pinkwashing, too, because they love to use
I'll
that
I'll write that
as,
down. I'll write that. I have a few things that you mentioned.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I want people to know what you're referring to when you when you talk about Israel being a right-wing nationalist nation versus what most countries that affiliate to the UN that are sort of in a modern sense we would call liberal democracies, where you have representative government, you have a parliament, you have parties, things like that. But in Israel, you talk about there being a right-wing nationalist mood. And can you just talk about how it differs?
Well, I think it does differ, obviously, but I think the U.S., like, really loves to get ideas from Israel, in ways that, you know, the U.S. is not, like, a liberal democracy either. At least, I don't think so. But I think the main thing is, like, the normalization of, like, violence from birth and in a different way than we see here. Like, there's still the military-industrial complex, like, really, I don't even know how to explain it. Just the fact that, like, talking to, like, being on the street and, like, talking to any Israeli and, like, saying, like everyone will say, like, this is our homeland, and, like, we will murder anyone who, like, disagrees or is, like, our enemy. Like, there's this insane layered fear-mongering from birth, if you were born there, if you're Israeli, especially if you're a white Jewish person, that, like, so many people do not even question. So for me, like, I know there's a lot of, like, comparisons to, like, how it is here, too. Like, for example, I remember when the Great March of Return started, and I was talking to a friend, and I was like, why aren't people outraged? Like, I think, like, 20 people had been murdered at that point, and I was, like, on the phone with my other anti-Zionist friends, and I was like, why aren't people, like, rioting in the streets? And, like, this is insane. Like, so many people are being murdered for peacefully protesting. And she was like, well, like, are people rioting in the streets when, like, a black man gets shot? And she's like, I mean, kind of, but it's not on the mainstream news. Like, it's not, like, thousands and thousands and, like, millions of people are... And she's like, it's the same thing. Like, it's this normalization of, like, people just getting murdered by, like, institutional violence. And... I like made that connection for a second. I was like, oh, obviously things are still different, but I kind of began to understand, like, this, like, really, really deep brainwashing of, like, everyone who was born there, every Israeli, basically, even if you are on the left in Israel, like, you're still, like, a centrist, basically, like, you're still pro-occupation, pro having a two-state solution, which is inherently greedy, and, like, yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot.
So there is a lot. So as much as you feel comfortable sharing, please tease out a two-state solution. You just said it. So again, I'm going to go backwards based on some of the things you said that I want people to know.
So two-state solution is, from what I've seen in the past, like, 3 years or 4 years, like, the main people who advocate for it are... like, liberal Zionists, basically, like, liberal white Jews who are like, well, I'm against the occupation, but I still want to stay. I still think the Jews deserve a state in Israel, and, like, I think, like, you know, Palestine deserves to be free, but, like, only to this one extent, like, only if we can, like, and yeah. So anyway, its like meaning is inherently greedy because. Of literally all the settlements that are being built, which makes a two-state solution impossible, and it made it impossible 20 or 30 or 40 years ago.
Yes.
So
I think that's one of the key things to realize with a lot of the messaging around the two-state solution is essentially it says, well, we want to divide up and then be able to somehow enforce the lines of division, even though the lines of division have been broken every time that there's been lines drawn.
Right.
And who's making those lines? And there are illegal settlements all the time. So it's one thing, and this is my opinion. I'm not Jewish. I'm not Palestinian. I'm Puerto Rican from New Jersey. You know, but from what I can gauge, that many of the layers who talk about wanting a two-state solution very rarely do anything when there's a violation of any sort of resolution that's put forward, and then new settlements, illegal settlements, pop up. There's not nearly enough outrage for that.
Yeah, and they're actually illegal, like, in international law, like, they're actually legal. Yeah,
I'm
so,
waiting
yeah.
to see what kind and of so, recourse there is mm-hmm. for Palestinians that the IDF, Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, Bibi. Thinks is acceptable. Mm-hmm. I really don't think anything is acceptable to them except they
wanting
just,
it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, wanting it all and more, actually.
So
and part of Lebanon and part of Egypt and
yeah,
and
when it is just, it going to stop?
Yeah.
So that's my reading.
Yeah, you're right.
So if you can talk about the March of Return, mm-hmm. that could be helpful for people
okay.
who might have heard that.
So the Great March of Return is basically a peaceful protest that's been happening since March in Gaza on the border, just like saying like we want equity, we want to be liberated, we want to be free. Like, you cannot have all these confinements from land and air and sea.
Mm-hmm.
We are living in an open-air prison, mm-hmm. like, literally an open-air prison, the world's largest open-air prison. And so...
It's surrounded by Israel on all sides.
Yeah, Israel
and
on
leave.
All sides. You mm-hmm. cannot leave. If right. you want to leave, you have to apply for a permit, which could take months or years.
Mm-hmm.
There's lack of medical supplies, so people are protesting and they're getting shot, and they're getting either seriously injured or killed, and there's almost no medical supplies to... actually help those people, which is infuriating. And then, yeah, it's still going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think I want to say like 200 people have been murdered or, yeah, I don't even, or, and injured over 500 people have definitely been injured. And the IDF loves to do this thing where they will like shoot someone either in the leg or an arm so they have no choice but to amputate because there's no like medical supplies to really like do constructive surgery on that person. So there's like an ongoing generation of Palestinians who have lost a leg or an arm who like can't do the things they used to do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this like generation of just like disabled people who don't have the proper equipment to even heal the right way.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, so morally like infuriating is like a watered down word.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of
yeah.
watering down, not to make light of a pun, but yeah. can you talk about pink washing?
Mm-hmm.
Another term you use.
Okay, yeah. So what month was that? Was that in September, the pink
yes.
washing? Okay.
Yes.
So so basically, pink washing exists in other countries too. I mean, we know that. So the term pink washing basically means any fascist state that... I guess claims to be like a liberal democracy, but
mm-hmm.
then they will so therefore they like support queer and trans people and they're so progressive and whatever, while still like upholding really fascist regimes and like harming and murdering people
mm-hmm.
literally on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay because they're so progressive and they love queer and trans people and we gave them a place to speak,
yeah.
so everything's fine, basically.
on the U.S. side, I just want to talk about pink washing and how
mm-hmm.
it functions here.
Yeah.
And in other countries as well, but I'm from here.
Mm-hmm.
Where gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender LGBT groups will often use the fact that gay people have rights as such
mm-hmm.
in Israel, and therefore Israel is more advanced and more deserving. The implication is more deserving of our support as LGBT people. I'm transgender as LGBT people
mm-hmm.
because it's the safest place in the Middle East if you're queer or trans.
Mm-hmm.
But my immediate answer to that is yeah, if you're not Arab.
Mm-hmm. If you're a white Jewish person.
Right, then it's very safe
mm-hmm.
for you.
Yeah.
But what about queer and trans Palestinians?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Can they look forward to any sort of...
They can't come to the Pride Parade.
It's
whoa, what
it's fascinating.
It's almost like it's apartheid.
Yeah, so that's an important
mm-hmm.
piece that I think on the U.S. side,
mm-hmm.
that is a blaring... misstep on their part
mm-hmm.
at best
mm-hmm.
but oftentimes it's actually more insidious than that, and there's
yeah.
actually pretty conscious support of the Zionist regime
mm-hmm.
there.
And it also I think makes a lot of like liberal Zionists feel good about themselves.
Oh, sure.
And so like the protests that we were at, like there was a trans IDF soldier came to Portland a few months ago, and we of course were there, and we were like
waiting outside.
Yeah, yeah, just like, do you, I don't think people know that like just all the layers there is to it.
Mm-hmm.
And even with like the younger generations, like you saw like there was like literal children being dragged just like with their moms or whatever. I'm like, hey, do you know about pinkwashing? Do you know what it is?
It was interesting. The
like,
kids were interested, and their like, no. parents were dragging
yeah.
them away.
And that's how it is in the Jewish community. No one talks about it. It's like more than an elephant in the room. It's like a huge, just like, we don't talk about it. Everything's fine. There's an underlined like message that if you don't support Israel, like you're not Jewish enough. You're not a real Jew if you don't go on your whatever.
And you're self-hating.
Oh, I'm so self-hating. Yeah. yeah. Or you're a self-hating Jew, which is just like so funny, honestly.
Yeah.
And yeah. And so
you're
like,
a very proud Jewish woman.
Oh.
So I take a lot of my cues from you.
Yeah.
Watching some of your activism, I'm so inspired by it because a lot of the people in JVP, I love them so much.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're much older.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's something there in terms of being able to talk about being a proud Jewish woman and a feminist and a socialist, and that you're able to put forward that message at the university is so crucial.
Yeah.
Can you please talk about how that came to be and what's going on?
What is going on? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so I actually went on a trip that was even more, like, morally corrupt than Birthright, called March of the Living. The name itself, March of the Living, is,
sounds
like,
a little scary.
It is really scary.
Sounds like a ride at Six Flags.
It does sound like a ride at Six Flags that I don't want to go on.
Sure.
So basically, they take high school seniors, it's also free, high school Jewish seniors to Auschwitz, to Birkenau, to all the death camps. They take you to mass graves. They say, like, look where your family was killed. Like, really horrific, horrific things to see when you're 16 without any knowledge of what is going on. I had absolutely no idea what was happening in Israel. I was a kid still, basically, looking into colleges. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. And then after that, directly after, like, 2 days after, they take you to Israel, and they take you to bars, and they're like, go party, like, look what you have now because of, like, this horrible thing that happened to you, like, because A and B happened, here you go, which is such a, like, insane black and white narrative of, like, false history of how Israel was created.
Yeah. And they often don't talk about settler colonization.
No.
Or that, you know, Palestine used to be a colony of England, and it was divvied up in something called the Balfour Declaration. Mm-hmm. And that was how Israel sort of came to be in an official sense.
Yeah. And I took a Zionist class like a few terms ago just to get my facts straight. So.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
Now I know my my facts and my receipts, everybody. Yeah. I have them. So basically, it's not a coincidence that so many young Jews, or just so many Jews in general, have no idea what is happening because there's money that's put into like making sure that Jewish diaspora has no idea. So if you find out,
remember,
you have to do that work yourself.
Can you talk about, I mean, to whatever degree you can or want to, it's just I have, Donna, one of my friends that talks about the anti-Yiddish sentiment, right, by a lot of Israelis who come to the U.S. to sort of teach the Yiddish culture out of young Jews in yeshiva.
Yeah, and that's, because when Israel was established as like a state, they wanted to make Hebrew Hebrew hadn't been used as, casual language, for literally hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Like, no one was speaking Hebrew on the streets and on, like, you know, in grocery stores or whatever. Mm-hmm. And early Zionists were like, no, I want Hebrew to be the language. Like, they're creating a state, essentially, where they're colonizing and they're, like, putting out a little, like, you know, platform of, like, what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And so people, early Zionists, were like, well, I just speak Yiddish. Like, I don't want to speak Hebrew. That's weird. This is, like, a language in our Torah, which is, like, a holy language. Like, it shouldn't be a casual thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, early Zionists were like, well, it doesn't matter. We're still doing it. So, like, people wanted to preserve that, like, that culture because that's, like, literally what they grew up with.
Sure.
And it's important to them. And it was definitely, like, trying to be erased by whatever early Zionists and
under the banner of this bizarre sort of like strong Jew versus weak mm-hmm. Jew dichotomy mm-hmm. that they were trying to establish.
They tried also early Zionists collaborated with Nazis, so that's some tea right there, which a lot of people don't talk about.
Can you talk
which
about
speaks
it?
To their nature? Yeah. Basically, a lot of people think that the creation of the State of Israel like was a direct like after
confession.
After the Holocaust, yeah. like oh this horrible thing happened, yeah. and so
like a reparation.
Yeah, and that's not true. Like early Zionists were in works of coming up with something for like a Jewish state in the late 1800s, and like the first Zionist Congress was in the 1800s, and also it was all white Jewish men. So if that tells you anything about who was leading this they call it a colonization act, which is like what they call it. And so if you say, well, Zionism is not colonization, mm-hmm. read your history, because mm-hmm. literally that is in the title of the documents that they created. So. But yeah, they collaborated during World War II with Nazis, basically saying, you don't want Jews. We want them. We want mass numbers of Jews here because we're colonizing. We want like large numbers of people to come, and you don't want them. So how about for now, while you're going on through this war, we'll take them mm-hmm. and you can like, you know, come visit or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like this, we'll figure out a little deal. And that happened basically. So it's like you claim to have even the early Zionism is like so true to even how it is now. So for people who are like,
right, what we see now was always the plan.
It was always the plan. Yeah. And Theodor Herzl is the first Zionist, like whatever. Theodor Herzl wrote a book called The Old New Land, mm-hmm. where it's literally a fiction book of like his dream of what Israel would be. And it's like this like utopia of like everyone has equal rights and like people are vegetarian. It's like a classic example of a literal white man not considering any way his action would affect others or even who was there.
Mm-hmm.
And a common question I asked when I was like studying this in that class I told you about was like
at Portland State University. What
where,
is the class called?
History of Zionism.
Fabulous.
Yeah, all taught by Zionists. I was the only one who was not a Zionist.
Oh, dear.
The only one.
Okay.
But anyway.
I was going to ask you more about the professor, but maybe not.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right,
go on.
But yeah, like I would ask like, and did he not consider that there were people there? Like what, wouldn't you like consider who was there or who had been there for hundreds and thousands of years? Like, was that not a question in his mind? Everyone's like, no. You know, he just wasn't thinking about that at the time because of the pogroms. And I cannot possibly fathom. I mean, we know colonizers, like, do not think about that, obviously. But I just cannot fathom, like, not literally writing, like, a over 500-page book of, like, your dream utopia and not adding that in.
Yeah.
And this was not, like, that far long ago. This was, like, in the 50s and in the 40s. So.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean he didn't know who was there? He had to have known. And it's not like this is all a surprise. Like, the history of Israel was mapped out. Like, the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians was mapped out. This like, when people say, like, this is not, you know, like, this is not, like, who we are. I'm like, yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
go read a book, like, written by early Zionists, because this is exactly, like, their dream.
Yeah.
And it looks exactly like that now.
And I'm very interested in the sort of like, this is not who we are. And not just in the Israeli context,
mm-hmm.
all over, you know, even in the U.S., in the advent of the abuse of people that are in the caravan right
mm-hmm.
now, people that are at the border that
mm-hmm.
are trying to apply for asylum, they're being denied, their human
mm-hmm.
rights are being violated. And people will say, this is not who we are. And it always baffles my
mm-hmm.
mind. I think this is very much in line who we are,
mm-hmm.
one.
Right.
And even if it wasn't, do you have some sort of political program to transform it?
Yeah.
Because it seems like you're virtue signaling right now, as if to just say, this is not who we are, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's say it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is. But
right.
let's say it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Then what?
Yeah, then what?
It's a little bit frustrating.
It's very frustrating.
So I also want to go back to Airbnb. You mentioned
mm-hmm.
Airbnb.
Oh, yeah.
Can you say why Airbnb is not being supported by people who support boycott, divestment,
mm-hmm.
and sanctions?
Yeah, so Airbnb was being called out basically by BDS saying they have listings in like settlements in
mm-hmm.
the West Bank, which
mm-hmm.
is illegal. And basically, like, you can come and stay there for, like, a discounted price because it's in the West Bank
mm-hmm.
or whatever. So BDS called to, like, take out their listings in the West Bank, basically. Like,
mm-hmm.
truly the least they could do.
Have they?
I think they did. Well, okay. they made a statement saying they would.
Okay.
I don't think they actually have yet.
We're watching.
We are watching.
Okay.
But yeah, that was a big win for them. I think they worked on that for like 2 years.
And then finally, Mark Lamont Hill.
Okay, yeah.
Can you talk about this?
So yeah, Mark Lamont Hill. He's an author, right?
Yeah, and a host and anchor on CNN.
Okay, yeah.
Or was. He's fired now.
So he spoke
at... Black man, by the way.
Yeah, black man.
Good looking black man. Sorry. Yeah. Okay.
And his book is also amazing. I had to read it for a class. Okay. It's really good. I think it was like a Palestinian conference. I don't know what the conference was.
He was on a UN envoy.
Oh, it was for the UN.
Yeah, he was speaking internationally.
So, yeah, he was asked to speak internationally, like, to give solidarity to Palestinians and the struggle and everything. And...
not in his role as a CNN anchor.
Just as a person.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, was in Palestine over the summer when I was there. Oh. So I saw him like tweeting while I saw the things he saw, basically. Mm-hmm. I saw like his live experience like play out. Mm-hmm. So I could completely understand like the mental process of coming back here and being like, okay, now I literally have to say something. And
thank you for saying that you went and that he went. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes, you know, as you know, many people say, you need to go. To Israel, you don't know. So yeah, you've been, Mark Lamont Hill has been.
Yeah.
So thank you for saying that.
Yeah, and I think he spoke at this really amazing place in East Jerusalem. I forget. It's a bookstore. It's like amazing radical leftist bookstore in East Jerusalem, which is considered Palestinian territory, whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he spoke out about Israeli war crimes and like just Israeli like human rights violations, as if that's like some radical
or controversial.
Mm-hmm. But we know Palestinian lives are always put under like a microscope of like deemed too controversial to be seen as like valid or whatever.
Yeah.
So he got a lot of backlash and lost his job.
Particularly because of the From the River to the Sea.
Yeah. Okay. So
at the end.
Yeah. So From the River to the Sea has like been a political baseline of like Palestine
solidarity, like,
and
around the world,
and it's like such a powerful line. And I guess Zionists will say like, oh, but Hamas has adapted it or has said it throughout time once or twice, whatever, and like, well, they focused on that, and so that's why he got a lot of backlash, because they were
and ultimately was fired.
Yeah. And I don't know what the updated version of
that. No, he's still
this
fired.
Was like, yeah, he's still fired. I don't know, like, what, like, if he's gotten any job offers or anything, but
I hope so. Ugh. And then also, I honestly, I hope people consider the character of CNN. You know, and I know CNN is experienced as the moderate of the three big TV cable stations, but I hope people think about that and consider alternative news sources. On KBOO, we play Democracy Now! Twice every day.
Mm-hmm.
Democracy Now! Is an independent news source that is not funded by the oil and gas companies when covering climate change, and not covered by weapons manufacturers when covering war and peace.
Mm-hmm.
And
Amy Goodman
says that every day right now during the holiday season, and her calls to get independent funding from listeners like us. I say to people, you might want to think about, you know, where you're getting your news from.
Mm-hmm.
Democracy Now! I think is far superior than CNN, even though it's just 1 hour
a
day.
Yeah.
So if you could talk a little bit about, so first of all, thank you for all of that. Like, that
you're
is a wealth of information.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot to process, but
you bring tea and receipts, and
she does.
We appreciate you. So can you talk about what is happening at PSU with JVP now?
Yeah. So basically, we just started our chapter, like, 2 months ago. We are very new. So
congratulations.
Thanks. It's been really good. The support has been amazing. We're not like we do events and stuff with JVP Portland, but we ultimately like wanted to be our own chapter.
Yeah, youth character is
so
very important.
Yeah. And also just like highlight things that are happening at PSU.
Excellent.
Specifically. Because as I said before, like anywhere you look, there will be some sneaky tie to Israel that you like can find because of how like big Israeli corporations are and how they like manage to weasel their way into like universities and like For example, like Leupold and Stevens' DSA campaign.
Oh, yeah. With the Trailblazers.
Yeah, with the Trailblazers. Mm-hmm. Like, that is right here in Portland. Yeah. And that's a big campaign, too. Mm-hmm. And it's really important. Also, everyone should support that, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know what events are being planned for that, but...
Well, they just had someone that was able to get in.
Oh, yeah.
And do a demonstration.
The hometown hero thing.
So mm-hmm. we'll see what the response is.
Yeah.
Now that there's more of an eye on it. I mean, mm-hmm. Politically, I'm sure, and I'm guessing here, but politically, I'm guessing that the executives of the Trailblazers and of the Moda Center, where they're housed, they're weighing their political options and seeing whether mm-hmm. or not it would hurt their bottom line more to keep them or let them go.
Yeah, yeah. And I've talked to Olivia about this, too.
Olivia Coppi.
Yeah,
the co-chair of Portland Democratic Socialists of America.
And, mm-hmm. like, there's definitely... I think the main thing is, like... being accused of, like, supporting BDS is, like I said, like, a million times out, because there's no education on anti-Zionism versus anti-Semitism.
Right.
Businesses don't want to be accused of that.
Yes.
And so I think JVPSU is going to write a letter from Jews saying, if you we are boycotting this with DSA.
Excellent.
And, like, from Jewish people, I'm telling you this is not anti-Semitic. Like, yeah. And here's why. Like, give, you know, like, a real explanation of... people who really just don't know, like, why are we boycotting this?
Excellent.
Without any context. So, like, giving mm-hmm. them the context and saying, from Jews, like, you need to support this. You need to, like, divest from this company.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think that can sometimes work, you know, so.
Well, I wonder what the mood is like on campus around your agitating. Like, what is the reaction like?
I have no idea. Oh. I know, I'm sure people are not, like, loving, well, Zionists. I'm sure Zionists are not loving it.
Okay, but most people are not Zionists. So, like,
yeah,
generally, what is
generally it? Generally, yeah. Good.
Okay.
Like, obviously, SUSU has been so supportive.
Portland State University. Student Union, the P is silent.
Yeah, the P is silent,
mm-hmm.
Obviously, because they're all angels and I love them. But we're still new, so it's, like, only people who I'm, like, friends with really know, like, what we've been up to, kind of.
Okay.
Because we're still, like, kind of blooming, and we're only having, like, our second Shabbat dinner is tonight, where I will be after this.
With me?
Eating latkes.
Thank you.
Thank you. and drinking wine, maybe. I don't know. I'm 21 now, so I can. Okay. My birthday was the first night of Hanukkah, so.
Happy birthday.
Alanika. Thank you, everyone.
Alanika. Love
yeah.
that.
But, like, overall, in the general Portland community, people have said, like, thank you so much for doing this. Oh, like, God. It's been needed for years. And even with JVP Portland, like, so many of those people have been doing this work for over, like, 20, 30 years. And they're like, thank you. Like, we need younger voices and younger Jews to, like, really take up space in Jewish communities and mm-hmm. say, like, because I don't think it's the responsibility of anyone who's Palestinian to constantly say, like, you know... like, advocate for literal, it's like,
true.
Peace and human rights. Like, that should be my job. That should be our job to work on our own families and work on our own communities and radicalize people. That's my job. Like, mm-hmm. and I can do that job
it's
very
so
well. Yeah.
You do.
And I will.
I've seen you.
Yeah.
It's excellent.
Yeah.
I can't say enough how important this piece is for young Jewish people, if there are any that are listening or if you know any, to think about taking up this call, because it is the perceived complacency
mm-hmm.
of young people that there is able to be a continued attack, because the idea is that, you know, young Jews don't care about this. They're worried about other things.
Mm-hmm.
And sure they are, but it's fabulous that you're taking up this mantle.
And you don't, yeah, and like the idea that's like, oh, we're just like, as if I don't also care about anti-Semitism, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, as if you can't care about more than one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just such a lack of, like, I mean, yeah. I mean, there's a lot to say about the Jewish community in general, but even in my own family, like, my little sister who's 15 was, like, she's, like, it's important for young Jews to be in youth groups together. So, like, I grew up going to, like, Jewish youth groups with other Jewish people and, like, talking about all, you know, like, Jewish traditions and cultures and religious stuff. Even though I'm not religious now, I still, like, completely value it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even talking to her and her friends, like, they saw the Free Palestine bumper sticker on my car and they were like, whoa, like, and I was like, oh, do you want me to explain? And they're like, yeah. And so I did. And they were like, that's really messed up. Like, thank you for telling us.
How old are these kids?
15.
Excellent.
And they're like, yeah, well, I know I support Black Lives Matter. I know I support, like, all these other miscellaneous movements. So, like, it would make sense that I would support this, too. And I'm like, yeah.
Sure does.
I see, like, little light bulbs makes clicking. And it makes me so happy because they're really smart and they're our future. And
yeah. Show me a Black Lives Matter activist that is not in lockstep support of Palestine.
Exactly.
It's really something.
Everyone's struggles are intertwined, and like that's so important to remember.
And then the almost lockstep solidarity between white nationalists and white supremacists in the U.S. Mm-hmm. and their support for Israel.
For Israel. What a coincidence.
It's important. Look at who you're in bed with.
Yeah. And look who where the money is coming from, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what is to come? So we know tonight is the Hanukkah Shabbat, but like what's next?
I would love to bring some speakers from out of state to PSU.
Great.
There are some really amazing Palestinian poets and activists who I met when I was in Palestine it would absolutely like fill my heart if they could come, and also I could just like hug them again, but also like to hear them speak, obviously, because they're important. Speakers would be amazing, and also just I think we want to host like film nights. So just hosting different, like...
Like what film?
Well, I think we should... I don't know if you've seen this, Occupation of the American Mind.
No.
Is a really good one, only specifically about that topic of why Americans are so biased into supporting Israel without knowing any other background information.
Oh, okay.
Basically, it was made, like, 2 years ago, and it has, like, all the dates, all the receipts of, like... the Israel lobby that hires like ad men, basically like advertising men, to create slogans like, well, Israel has the right to defend itself, or like these men literally worked for beer companies and like sold beer to women, and like they are advertising men, so they knew like how to basically justify anything Israel did.
Wow.
And it worked. Mm-hmm. And that's why so many people,
it's
just
advertising,
isn't that crazy? And the receipts are all there, basically. Wow.
That these are the people.
Yeah, and they're hired, and they're like, hey, can you make Israel look good, basically? And they're like, yeah. And they get paid a lot of money to do that. And so, like, there's reasons why so many people just have no idea, especially so many Jews, and, like, the general American public does not, and also feels scared to, like, take a stance on this because they don't want to, like, overstep or like be anti-Semitic or whatever.
Well, anti-Semitism is a very serious and pervasive problem. There's no
doubt
about
that. And that's always my response. I'm like, you can support Palestine and support like Jewish, like anti-whatever. Like,
you can
fight fascists here and also there. That's a concept that you can do because they're tied together ultimately. Like, Jewish, like, you can support the Jews in your life and also be pro-Palestine. These things are not separate at all.
Yeah.
So to me that makes sense, but to a lot of people they're just like,
you're coming
whoa
up against the occupation of the American mind.
Yeah. So. And that's also I think a really clever name because that's exactly like what it is.
Can you talk about some of the best and prevalent anti-Zionist Jewish thinkers or writers?
Well,
Maxine Fuchsin.
Queen.
Well,
number one, Emma Goldman. Duh. She was the number one anarchist queen, revolutionary woman. I love her.
Yes.
She was Jewish. Goldman. Mm-hmm. Literally my last name. Why do I think of... I mean, when it comes to, like, authors, there's, like, a bunch of Israeli scholars who are also against the occupation and pro-Palestine. There's...
I'd be very happy if you can send me
Elon,
a syllabus.
Elon Pape.
Okay.
He wrote this book called The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. And he, like, is an Israeli man and literally wrote a book about how Palestinians were ethnically cleansed and, like, has all the dates of, like, each massacre, everything is written down. And basically he's stating, like, I think he's still alive. I don't know. But it makes me sad that a lot of these people are just old white Jewish men.
So that's where you come in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I always give credit to just like my friends because they do more than like anyone. At NYU today, my best friend of like 12 years passed, her and like three other people passed a BDS resolution.
Oh.
And that was today.
Fabulous.
So, like, when people are like, who's doing it? I'm like, my friends.
where is this?
At NYU.
At NYU.
And that passed today.
Congratulations.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Wow. I was just in New York. That's so good. Okay. So, I want to give a shout out to my friend Micah Bazant. He's in the Bay Area. He's a Jewish trans man that makes incredible art for the movement and very, very strong anti-Zionist Jew.
Bay Area has a huge JVP too.
I'm going tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm going for the Critical Resistance convention.
You should see if anyone from JVP is there.
Oh, maybe. I will, actually.
They have the biggest chapter, I think, in the U.S.
Okay. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do some interviews while I'm at the Critical Resistance convention. Actually, hopefully I can get Angela Davis. Also very, very strong Palestinian solidarity.
I'm reading
advocate.
That book right now, too.
Which one?
From Ferguson to Powell. What is it? Resistance is... Oh, what is the book name? It was like 2 years ago she wrote a book. But it's like talking about like different little essays from like the U.S. tied to Palestine. And it's really amazing.
Excellent.
Resistance, I don't know. Anyway, I'll think of it probably when this is over.
Yeah, again, I think a syllabus would be great if you can send one out.
I will. Mm-hmm.
Especially because JVP is at PSU, you know, like giving it some sort of a intellectual character, I think would actually be good for people who thrive on that. Especially because there are so many people who would tell you you're wrong. Right, so it's good to be able to lay out, you know, where you're getting you're getting all of your ideas from. I think it can be helpful. So finally, the good part. So give the pitch to people who are listening, whether you're listening to the people at home are listening, are young Jewish people that go to PSU or not. Maybe they know someone who's a young Jewish person that goes to PSU. Give the pitch to join, please.
Okay, so I think it is so important for young Jews to give each other the tools to join in, basically, because it can be very scary when you're isolated and you basically feel like you're the only, how could I be the only one who thinks this? Like, am I crazy? Mm-hmm. Like, for not wanting this, like, human rights violation done in my name, basically. And I'm here to tell you that you're not crazy.
Excellent.
And there are so many of us and we're growing and... you don't have to be, you do not have to be Jewish to be like to care about Palestine. You do not. The only reason that we're doing this is because like we feel like we literally have to.
It's being done in your name.
Exactly. And that's not okay. And I think anyone would do the same thing.
Excellent.
And, join, please.
How do people get in contact with y'all?
We have a Facebook page. Is it the acronym?
PSU,
Jewish Voice for Peace, PSU.
Excellent.
If you type all that, you'll find us. If you like our page, there's events and I share articles and stuff, like things that I think are valuable. And then winter term, we actually are going to get like some money, a little budget. So winter term, definitely to expect like actual speakers and like films and more dinners for sure.
Okay.
We want to have we try to do a Shabbat dinner every month with a different theme every month. So the last one was like Palestine 101 and I gave a 40 slide presentation on like what is BDS? What are all these terms?
And the kugel.
Oh, and I made a kugel and it was really good. My mother's recipe. Shout out to you, Roz Goldman.
Oh, thank you.
And this one is Bye Bye Birthright. And next one we will decide.
For Hanukkah,
yeah. And the next one we will decide the theme, but we want to keep it fun. So
excellent.
We will have a theme every month.
Okay.
That's to start. We don't know what will come in the future. Hopefully more power.
Okay. Yeah. Final thoughts, final words?
Support Palestine, please.
Okay.
You do not have to be a historian to join this revolutionary movement.
Yeah, excellent.
People will say that you need to have all the history and all the facts and like, oh, you're not smart enough to join.
Sure.
You don't know about all the wars that happened. I'm here to tell you do not have to know almost anything to know that apartheid and ethnic cleansing is not a good thing.
Fabulous. That is excellent. Thank you very, very much. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. I will speak to you all next week on The Struggle, KBOO Community Radio. Thank you.
Join me every first and third Friday from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. from the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and political commentary. We will ease your troubled mind with licensed mental health counselor Cheryl Jefferson, political analysis provided by the Prophet of Rage, and calling in from the planet of rhythm and blues, musicologist Professor Soul. From the grassroots, I'm your host, Lynn.